From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 20th day of November 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, Verison wants out of its corn contracts. The EU is reforming the cap again. And the U.S. Senate is having a very active agricultural week. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau on sustainability and hear a story about sustainable agriculture and the Farm Beginnings programs around the Midwest. Oh, don't forget that at the end of the half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Mark Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on a Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contracts finished the wheat at 5.11¾, down 15¼ for the December. March at 5.31, 15½ lower, and the May wheat at 5.44¾, down 15¾. December corn futures in Chicago, 3.63¾, down 15¢. The March at 3.80, 15¼ lower, and the May contract at 3.91, down 15½¢. July futures in the corn pit down 15½ at 4.01¾, and the December contract for next year at 4.26 finished down 15½¢. December oats a dime lower at 2.06¼. January soybeans today at 8.56 down 41¢. March at 8.62¾, 41½ lower, and the May futures down 41½ as well at $8.71½. July contract 8.79 down 43½ on the August. $8.81, down 44¢. Next year's November soybeans, $8.69½, down 45½. December bean meal futures at $2.57.20, down $10.50. And December bean oil at $30.63, down $1.34 for the day. From the Mercantile Exchange side, live cattle futures finished the December contract at $85.80, up $1.60. February at $86.52½, up $1.37½. November feeders at 894.80, down 77½¢, and December lean hog futures at 56.80, 87½¢ higher on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. December crude oil futures at $49 a barrel are down $4.62. The January at $51.20, down $2.90. December ethanol, $1.64¾. That's about 4¼ lower. Natural gas at $6.30¹, down 43¼. RBOB gasoline at $101¼, 9¼ lower. And December heating oil, this is diesel fuel, at $1.68¹, or $1.68¹. That's 7¼ lower. December propane futures trading 72.25, down 2¼ for the afternoon. And the gold futures at $748.60 are up $12.70 for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 78.52. That's 147 points lower. And the U.S. dollar at 87.93 is up 0.13 on the afternoon. The CRB index at 232.98. is down 7.58 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. A lake effect snow warning is in effect for LaPorte and St. Joseph counties in north-central Indiana through noon central time, 1 eastern time tomorrow. A lake effect snow advisory is in effect for Porter County and northwestern parts of Indiana through 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And for Elkhart, Starkey, Marshall, Fulton, Fulton and... I'd forgotten how to pronounce this one. You'll have to forgive me. You'll know which one it is. In north central Indiana through 1 o'clock tomorrow, noon central time tomorrow. Tonight, here's what the weather forecast looks like in Illinois and southwestern Indiana. Mostly cloudy, a few scattered flurries early, and then it will clear off. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
Time now to take a look at the agricultural futures markets here on the Closing Mark Report on a Thursday afternoon. We're always joined by Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Kind of an ugly day in both the outside markets and in Chicago at the corn and soybean pits and the wheat pit, down 45 cents in the beans. But I think maybe it's the outside markets that are the bigger story, below 50 bucks for crude oil. What's up with that?
Well, it's everything. It's the prospect of, I mean, we're in a deflating type market. We're deleveraging. So everything across the board, no matter whether it's corn, soybeans, crude oil, equities, whatnot, people are wanting to turn that inventory into cash for safety. You can kind of see you've got U.S. Treasury bonds up almost 4 points here today. That's a very strong move. So you do see people moving their wealth to safety under this deflationary type market, and that's pretty much the story. Gold's getting a little piece of it. There's an element of safety in the gold market. I'm not too sure how safe that is, but there is an element of safetiness kind of moving to the gold market, given the uncertainties of a declining economy, both here in the United States and globally.
Can we turn our eyes toward the Rust Belt, towards Detroit, and thinking that if Congress doesn't come in and help the automobile industry, that things will continue to fail?
Well, I don't think that's going to work one way or the other. I mean, I don't know if I think it just points out the underlying problems that we have in the economy, and is that everybody is overextended. We've got a credit crisis. There's you got businesses that don't trust anybody to sell or buy from anybody. Everything has kind of turned cash on the barrel head. You know, cash is king. So I think it's out of Washington's control, really. I'm not too sure politicians can do a whole lot about it. It's an economic contraction that we're seeing in the marketplace, and until it runs its course, we're going to see downward pressure.
Well, what do you think of the Dow Jones Industrial Average?
Well, technically, the chartists are going to get awfully bearish probably if we maintain this type of weakness that we have right now going into the close, and we're roughly down 160, 170 points. That is breaking down underneath the most recent low. We've kind of been in a consolidation phase. You could almost call it kind of a triangle-type formation. We've started breaking out to the downside of that triangle formation, and now if we maintain this weakness as we go on into the close, that's going to kind of get solidify that chart formation. So you're going to have chart people probably talking about a decline down to into the 6,200 range. That's what the chart picture would suggest. That doesn't necessarily mean that it has to go there, but your technical crowd is probably going to begin to start talking a lot more about a 6,000 type Dow rather than any kind of bottom in here.
And that is on the chart, is that a Fibonacci number? What is that number there? Is that a
Fibonacci? No, basically what that is using this congestion area that we've traced out here over the past 4 to 5 weeks between the 7,800 and 9,900. Using the midpoint of that, which would be about 8,900, and measuring that off of the early September high. We had an early September high up there around 11,000 and something. So you kind of view this 8,900 as halfway down, and if you subtract that off of that high, then that's how you get down into the low 6,000 mark.
Well, that number is pretty tough, but and that would be the largest. That would be the second largest drop by far in the Dow since the crash, since the Great Depression.
Well, that could very well be, but
I don't know if I still
want to relate everything back to the Great Depression. I mean, the stock market decline was just one element of the Great Depression.
Right, right. Well, there, I think the top 10 are about 44% on the drop, which is where 7,900 or thereabouts happens to be off the top. But the Great Depression was the only other one. And now that took 3 years, I think, all the way from 29 to 32 to lose it all. But it was a drop of 86% in the Dow. So we would be moving into some really new territory should we break down below this.
But I think in the type of environment that we're in, it's hard to predict what's going to happen. But
right.
I do think we've seen enough over the past year here that anything's possible. I mean, whoever thought we would be trading crude oil back below $50 when we were looking at $147 there in June. So that's a major decline in the crude oil market, and you can relate to it in corn. You had corn futures up at $8, and now we're down to $3.50 or $3.60. So there has been a major deflationary move take place here, and that's continuing.
Well, thank you much for joining us today.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In today's agricultural news, Verisun is seeking to void corn contracts. Ethanol maker Verisun has asked a bankruptcy judge to allow the firm to void contracts for the purchase of corn. Verisun would like to do so with 10 days' notice. Those against the action have until tomorrow to file their objections with the court. A hearing on the request will be held December the 2nd. The move comes on the heels of the company reporting a net loss of $476 million for the quarter ended September the 30th. Well, the EU will implement a package of farm reforms. European Union ag ministers reached agreement on a reform package for the Common Agricultural Policy, that's a CAP, which shifts more subsidies away from production to conservation or rural area revitalization. Ministers approved a smaller percentage shift than had been sought. The EU has agreed to raise milk quotas too, and then to remove them completely by 2015. Well, the Chinese are buying up corn and soybeans in-house. Traders say China is planning to buy 1.5 million metric tons to 3.0 metric tons of soybeans and 5 million metric tons of corn for state-owned reserves in an attempt to boost domestic prices. There's been no official confirmation from the Chinese government yet. These purchases would be in addition to the 1.5 million metric tons of soybeans and 5 million metric tons of corn the government already purchased for state reserves. Indiana pork has been banned. Russia has suspended imports of pork from Indiana Packers Corporation. USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Services says the Delphi, Indiana-based Packers product will not be allowed into Russia effective November the 24th after reporting the discovery of salmonella in a pork shipment. In Washington, D.C., swap oversight is being debated. Unregulated swap or derivative contracts would be considered futures contracts and regulated by the CFTC, that's the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, under legislation introduced today by Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin. Regulators and Congress are looking for a way to define credit default swaps and derivatives and to place those contracts on regulated clearinghouses, whether over-the-counter or directly on transparent exchanges. Harkin says placing swaps as regulated contracts would mean that they would meet daily reporting and margin requirements. And speaking of Senator Harkin, he says he'll continue to chair the Senate Ag Committee, and although there will be some new faces in Congress next year, he anticipates only minor changes in the structure and party makeup of his committee. On the subject of the Senate, that body is looking at an ag stimulus package. As the U.S. Senate looked at the stimulus package for the automobile industry yesterday, others were talking about a second stimulus package with ag provisions. Senator Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas asked Majority Leader Harry Reid to provide some, what she calls, especially helpful funding, including $1.12 billion for agricultural disaster relief. Oh, by the way, this time Lincoln would like to see farmers in her state benefit. She says Arkansas was not a beneficiary of the majority of earlier funds. And finally today, a bold new energy bill for 2009. New Mexico Senator Jeff Bingaman says energy done right will be a key to controlling climate change. So he expects, when the next Congress convenes, to put forth a starting point for energy legislation that would be both what he calls bold and broadly supported. Bingaman says, "We face an international climate crisis that demands a worldwide revolution in energy technology." Senator Bingham is a chair of the Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Hello, Public Radio for the Farming World from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason, the host of this program and of Commodity Week. You can hear both of them on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus takes up the definition of agricultural sustainability.
Many food processing and retail outlets are touting sustainability as an important quality of their products. Some companies are requiring producers to utilize specific production practices and even submit to third-party audits of their farmers in order to supply these companies with a product. These restrictions on production practices by companies interested in maintaining the appearance of a strong corporate responsibility image are likely to impose additional costs on farmers. Walmart's website devotes an entire page to sustainability and states, "Our opportunity is to become a better company by looking at every facet of our business, from the products we offer to the energy we use, through the lens of sustainability." McDonald's Vice President for Corporate Responsibility, Bob Langer, discusses the company's journey towards sustainability and lays out four scientific principles that lead to a sustainable society. "In a sustainable society," he says, "nature is not subject to systematically increasing concentrations of substances extracted from the Earth's crust and produced by society or the degradation by physical means." One of the major issues is the definition of sustainability. How do you define sustainability? Regardless of how you view the merits of these attitudes, sustainability requirements and limitations on production practices are an important part of agriculture's future. While there may not be a scientific basis for some of the production practice requirements, if a farmer is not able to find a buyer or must sell products they grow at a significant discount, the end result may be an economic problem for the producer. The McDonald's example given above is one of the few somewhat specific definitions as to what sustainability means. Many other companies are even vaguer on their particulars. Further, it is not clear that having taken actions to meet a production requirement that the rules will remain the same. Ideally, firms will pay a premium for products with special characteristics or produced using specific processes. But what starts out as a higher-level practice today often becomes the industry standard tomorrow. While retailers are the largest drivers in the push for sustainability, there are other interests at work. The environmental community has realized that the voluntary standard setting process can be an effective way to circumvent the American National Standards Institute traditional forum for developing policy. Voluntary standards setting has been a way to bring uniformity to their product or service, and there are arguments for having a standard. Recently, the voluntary standard setting process has been co-opted by individuals pushing their own political agendas. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-0850. Now up next, if you've ever wanted to farm, but weren't sure if it was possible or how to go about getting started, there's help just a web page away. I'll have more on the Farm Beginnings Program in Illinois. To be sure, this is a program for want to be low input, organic, or sometimes referred to as sustainable farmers. It's a program developed by the Land Stewardship Project. Its mission is to foster an ethic of stewardship for farmland, to promote sustainable agriculture, and to develop sustainable communities. Illinois Farm Beginnings is an initiative that provides opportunities for beginning and transitioning farmers to learn firsthand about values clarification and goal setting, whole farm planning, business plan development, and low-cost sustainable farming methods. It has been adapted in this case by University of Illinois Extension and the Land Connection. Harry Carr from Mint Creek Farms in Stell, Illinois, is one of the guest speakers.
Farm Beginnings Program is a program that is put on, available to people that want to start farming, that don't have a background in farming. It's put on by the University of Illinois Extension in conjunction with the Land Connection, a not-for-profit out of Chicago. And the intent is to draw upon the experience of local farmers and to help people wanting to get into farming to write business plans and develop a farm strategy by being able to network with people that are doing this on a daily basis to help them, you know, get off the ground and get going.
Starting a farm is a tough thing to do, be it the money, the land, or the skills. The Farm Beginnings Program aims to offer up a network of people and skill sets a young, new, or transitioning row crop producer can learn from and lean on. And then, of course, there's the whole of the culture.
The solutions that come from small-scale farming, both in terms of better environmental stewardship, improved quality of food, those all require people being closer to the land and considerably more labor, which is not a bad thing. You know, when you're looking at unemployment and job creation as being something that gets a lot of press, what's so wrong with people being involved with the land and working with the land doing agriculture? It's amazing how many people will do this as a hobby but not think of it as something that they could do for a living.
The Farm Beginnings Program around the Midwest, there are several, including Illinois Farm Beginnings, may just be the avenue that allows that transition from dream to hobby to career. If you'd like more information, visit illinoisfarmbeginnings.org on the web. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the University of Illinois. Please visit our website, the address, willag.org. That's willag.org. In just 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather forecast.
It's National Carbonated Beverage with Caffeine Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, the first export shipment of crude oil from the U.S. to Europe left from Philadelphia. A cargo of more than 1,300 barrels of crude arrived 7 weeks later in London. The crew of the Elizabeth Watts was shanghaied. because recruiting a crew transporting oil was impossible. In 1883, William Siemens died, a German-born English engineer and inventor. He was a pioneer in undersea cable and the steel industry. He developed a regenerative system using waste gases to preheat fuel gases, key in the open heat furnace used to purify steel. In 1918, Charles Richard Van Hise died, a U.S. geologist. He regarded soil conservation as crucial to the well-being of the nation. In his work, The Future of Man in America, he wrote, "We should work with the agents of the earth rather than reverse their work, as we have been doing since American settlement began." And in 1998, Ted Fujita died, a Japanese-American meteorologist. He was known as Mr. Tornado for his research into severe storms. He developed a scale for measuring tornadoes on the basis of their damage, and he was the first to verify downbursts and microbursts and their impact on airplanes. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason, and we're joined by phone now with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete. Let's take a look at what's been happening here in the Midwest. It's darn cold outside today.
Yes, it is, and it's going to get colder the next 2 days, actually. We've got northwesterly winds bringing cold air down via a high-pressure system that's sitting up along the Manitoba-Saskatchewan border region and dropping southeastward. This big high-pressure system promises cold weather, but also mostly fair weather, except as the cold weather arrives, there are a few snow showers and a few flurries in northeastern Illinois, and some lake effect snows, even heavier activity in northwestern Indiana. We'll see some of that. But basically, the cold air moves in, the temperatures get hung up in the low 30s this rest of today. They'll drop down to about, 20 degrees tonight in central Illinois. Tomorrow, they'll have trouble getting out of the low 30s. They'll still be back up in the low, maybe mid-30s downstate tomorrow with brisk northwesterly winds, clear skies, temperatures down in the teens tomorrow night. And then on Saturday, we get temperatures maybe getting up to 40, upper 40s on Sundays. We get a little bit of a warm-up, and no precipitation in sight, really, until Monday. Some showers come across, and then it gets warmer.
Boy, that's, 10 to 15 degrees below normal, I would think.
Yeah, right? It's going to be running about 10 to 12 degrees below normal the next couple of days, and then get back to normal on Monday. And next week, actually warmer, but only relatively. Of course, it'll be just about normal next week. And Thanksgiving, by the way, looks to be a totally normal day. Beautiful weather, lows around freezing in the early morning, highs in the mid-40s.
All right. Well, that's all good news. What do they have happening to them in the South, deep South, that is, in South America?
Oh, South America, okay. We have in the Brazil area, they had plenty of showers still lingering up through there that are providing good moisture for the spring and summer crop development. In the Argentine, they did finally get some rain in northern Argentina to help finish off the wheat crop, but really it's going to benefit the spring crops. And then further south, it's dry again in the Argentine, and that seems to be a chronically dry area. One more thing I mentioned. This third Thursday, we have our long-range forecast today from the National Weather Service.
Okay.
And we've got for December, January, and February, which is meteorological winter, they're looking for temperatures above normal on a big swath in the central U.S. from the Rio Grande northeastward right through Oklahoma, Missouri, Illinois, up into northeast Indiana and southern Michigan. So the center of the country above normal. Everywhere else, that is the northwest and the east coast, about normal or really indeterminate, in their words. For precipitation, mostly dry in the south from Arizona across Florida, wet in Kansas, Oklahoma, northwest Arkansas, and much of Missouri, and the rest of the country take your pick. But it's interesting that they're going mild for the winter, and our feeling is that that's not going to be the way it is. So we think that we're going to be tilted cold, at least in the eastern half of the country, and mild in the west. So we'll see how it comes out. The National Weather Service forecast is for this big mild winter coming up for the central part of the country.
Thanks much, Pete.
Okay, my pleasure.
Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joining us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Mark Report. We have a good afternoon.